must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the broadcast today. My name's JD. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming, and this is obviously your Red Pill Reports for the 15th day of, what month is this? Oh, it's December, isn't it? Yes, man, we're almost through with this year. Can you believe it? I can't believe it. Also, I can't believe it's Monday yet again. That weekend went way too quick. I don't know about you guys. I hope all of you out there had an awesome weekend. I had an awesome weekend. The weather here in Missouri, for some reason, was in the mid-60s all weekend. It was just absolutely beautiful. I got a lot of books read and rebuilt a guitar this weekend. I'm pretty excited about that. So my weekend was pretty awesome. I also got to make a new friend this weekend, and I am very excited to be introducing all of you to him in the 11 o'clock hour. Of course, I'm talking about Fernando Furfall Aguirre, the gentleman who runs the modernsurvivalist.com website. This gentleman actually was in Argentina through the socioeconomic collapse there and decided to bug out. He's written a couple of great books about being ready in the event of a socioeconomic collapse, and also he's written a book about when it's time to bug out, where that line in the sand actually is. So he will be joining us at 11 o'clock today. I'm really looking forward to some more discussion with him. He's a very fascinating guy. Huge week, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be such a big week for guests. I cannot thank you guys enough, those of you who are tuning in every single day, making this part of your daily news source. But I also am really excited to be bringing the guests that we're able to bring for you guys every week and every day at 11 o'clock Central Time. This week is going to be crazy, guys. Today, we've got the prep expert, Mr. Modern Survivalist, Fernando Aguirre, going to be fantastic. Tomorrow, L.A. Marzulli on the show. Essentially, we'll be talking to Indiana Jones, ladies and gentlemen, and those of you who follow L.A., I don't have to tell you how excited I am for that discussion to go down. Wednesday, we're going to be talking to Scott Bennett. Scott Bennett is the other side of the investigatory team that is breaking this mortgage crisis scandal. I'll stop right here just to remind everybody that all of the related articles that have to do with Greg Morse's and Scott Bennett's story relating to this mortgage scandal, you can find all of them at redpillreports.com under the link Mortgage Crisis. You'll see all of the 9 articles. There's also the link to the petition there. We've got to get people to sign this petition, guys. We've got a great opportunity coming up with the holiday season. Lots of people be around friends and family that they may not see as often as they like, and will have a lot of downtime. So this is the opportunity to print those articles out, get them in front of your friends and your family, get everybody in the loop in terms of where the value actually is in their home and whether or not they still have it anymore. And then please get involved with this petition. We can actually get something done in this respect. So I'd really like to get that accomplished for Greg. Greg and Scott, again, done so much work at breaking this mortgage crisis scandal. And the story is just so big. And until we can really get it out in front of people, we're not going to get any headway with this stuff, guys. So get the articles, get them printed out, get a signature on the petition, guys. That's all I'm asking, okay? Thank you guys also for supporting Truth Frequency Radio. I had a little chat with Chris this morning, and there have been some cool new developments over at Truth Frequency. The first one, I'm just going to say, for all of you people out there that are like me, and by that I mean are inherently 12 years old inside, if you go to truthfrequencyradio.com right now, go to the little search bar there and type in the word Bluebeam. You don't have to hit enter, do anything like that. Just type in the word Bluebeam, And then you could start messing around with your arrows on your keyboard and maybe hit that space bar once or twice and just let me know what happens. I'll let you know. It turns into a rocket ship and you can destroy the whole website. Take that, microplant powder, blah, blah. Okay, it's really fun. I'm not kidding. I've already destroyed the entire website like 4 times because I am, as I said, inherently 12 years old. The other bigger and better news going on at True Frequency right now, I'm really, really excited about this. There is now, if you go to Truth Frequency Radio and go to the Listen Live, which is just the fourth button over from the left, right at the top of the page there, you are going to go to the new beta version of the Truth Frequency Radio chat room. That's it. So you can log in there. We have to, you may have to register if you're not already a registered Listen Live listener, but then you can register. It doesn't ask you for a whole bunch of stuff, just an email and a name and a password. And then you can log in, but you'll come right into the chat room. And I think this is fantastic because this is a way for you guys out there to link up with us when we're on air. And any questions that you've got for me or for guests or for anything, you can put right into this chat room. I will preface this by saying I do have this chat room going. I also have a Skype up because that's where the radio show takes place, and I've obviously got a lot of articles and things to read, so I'll kind of have to be bouncing back and forth. But if you want to go to Truth Frequency Radio and go to that Listen Live link right there at the top of the page, it will take you into this new beta chat room. Would love it if you guys wanted to come in here and ask us questions. As I said, if you got questions for the listeners or questioners for the guests, that's a fantastic way to do it. It's a, you know, instant gratification, and I can just pass them right along. And this is it. You know, we always talk at Red Pill about how we want to create a forum. You know, this is not me. It is apparently me right now just sitting here talking to myself, but you know, the goal is that we make a collective out of all of us. You know, we all can reach out, share information. This chat room will allow you to post pictures. It will also allow you to send files. So if you have articles that you think are important, I mean, this is it. This is top of the heap right here. This is why Truth Frequency Radio is just so awesome, and so much why I love Chris Geo so much. And I hope he's not listening, because I'm not trying to butter him up for anything. I just, man, this is what we needed. We needed a live chat for the shows. This is fantastic. Super excited about it. So please, everybody, go there. Check that out. I was talking about the big week that we're getting ready to have, and I totally got sidetracked when we got to Scott Bennett. But I'll let you know, Thursday, Elsie Vincent, 440 Enigma, back on the show. I know I prefaced that last week thinking he was going to be last Thursday, and open mouth, insert foot, but he will be here on Thursday of this week, and we will pick up our discussion about the 440 frequency where we left off last time. And there's been some more interesting stories just over the weekend coming out about our good friends the Rockefellers and some of the things that they've been doing throughout history to obscure the truth, I guess I should say. So we'll get into that story, but it obviously relates to what Elsie Vincent and I will be talking about on Thursday. And then on Friday, Andrew Gauss will be back on the show again, and we'll be talking about economics. I bet you he'll probably have something to say about this whole oil thing that's going on right now. So that is what's going on right now. Please go check out the new chat over at Truth Frequency. Go into the Listen Live. I think this is going to be a really cool feature, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. So I hope that you guys are as well. Let's just say that lots of stuff happened over the weekend, guys. I mean, lots and lots of news. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, underneath the show section, which is usually right at the top of the page, you will also find all of these links to articles and some of the big stories that are going on right now. We try and spend the first hour bringing you guys up to date on all the pertinent news, things that are going on and may affect our lives all around the world and in your neck of the woods. And then obviously in the second hour, we obviously always have a fantastic guest. So happy that you guys are here. Let us dive into the big time news right now. A huge development still taking place right now in Sydney, Australia. Yesterday morning on Sunday, gunmen stormed into a cafe in the city center of Sydney and took a whole bunch of people hostage. There's been a lot of conjecture about how many specifically, anywhere from 5 to 20. And even right now, we don't even really have any idea. There may be as many as another dozen hostages still in this cafe in Sydney. So essentially, they have let 5 of the hostages go. Apparently, there are a number of gunmen, and the gunmen have made the hostages hold up a flag in the front of the window that is essentially a black flag with Arabic lettering on it. It is not necessarily the ISIS flag, But there definitely appears to be some sort of political motivation going on right now in Sydney. So this story is continuing to develop right now. They actually shut down essentially the entire city of Sydney. They shut down banks, they shut down government city branches and things like that. They even delayed the economic outlook, which was a big deal supposed to come down yesterday, and subsequently the currency there fell. So regardless of all that, there is a hostage situation. It is still going on in Sydney right now. If anything develops out of that, more than the information that we've already got, obviously we will get it to you as soon as we can. So let's move on to some other things right now. The Ukraine in the news as usual, recently passing a law on lustration, which is a term that is defined as the cleansing of government from past regimes officials. And so the EU is actually commenting on the fact that the Ukraine passed this lustration law and saying that that lustration law does not live up to the European principles according to the Venice Commission, and they are the EU advisory board on constitutional matters. So the EU is saying to Ukraine that the passing of this lustration law does not fall in line with European standards, and it has several serious shortcomings. The so-called lustration law, which was adopted back in October, could see a million Ukrainian officials, including members of the government, it could see all of them investigated, according to Prime Minister Yatsenyuk. Introducing the legislation was one of the most vigorous demands of the Maidan protesters, who took part in overthrowing President Yanukovych a year ago. So the political cleansing spree has split off into the streets in a wave of mob trash lustrations, is what they're called, when angry crowds are actually attacking officials, beating them up, and putting them into trash cans. So that's actually what's going on in the Ukraine right now, why the EU is coming down and saying that they're anti-lustration. Probably has something to do with the large IMF loans and things like that that are going to Ukraine, or supposedly going to be funneled to Ukraine. So that is what's going on there. China has offered military help to Iraq to defeat ISIS. That's kind of an unusual turn of events, more of the whole enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. But the Iraqi foreign minister has come out and said that the Chinese counterpart, which is the Chinese foreign minister, has made an offer to help Iraq fight the Islamic State militants. And Beijing has volunteered to assist with airstrikes, although it will not join the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS. So this is very interesting because China actually gets quite a bit of their oil from Iraq, and they have a lot of money invested there. So obviously China getting a little bit concerned about losing control of the Iraqi oil fields to ISIS. So now they are saying they are ready and willing to step up. Be interesting to see if they end up joining some sort of coalition with Iran, since Iran, we also know, is fighting against ISIS in Iraq also, but not as part of the U.S. coalition. So very interesting to see everybody still trying to fight this centralized enemy, but nobody really wanting to really go shoulder to shoulder. So China putting in the work there. British troops getting ready to return to Iraq as of next month in order to fight ISIS. The UK Defense Secretary, Mr. Fallon, has announced that hundreds of British troops will be sent to Iraq next month to train local Kurdish and Iraqi forces to help fight the Islamic State. This was an interview that he did with The Telegraph over the weekend. He says that troops will be training Iraqi and Kurdish forces in skills such as improvised explosive devices and bomb disposal techniques gained from years of experience in dealing with roadside devices in Afghanistan, as well as infantry skills. There will also be a small force protection team, force protection team of combat-ready troops who will be ready to defend the military training teams. So, do we see us moving away from advisory roles? I think that we can read that small force of protection team, combat ready troops, as to be an indicator of exactly that. Overall, they're still saying there's going to be 1,500 soldiers in the mission total from all of the countries in the coalition. But I think you could probably add another zero to that number at this point, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying. Let's see. France in the news right now, kind of shocking revelations regarding the CIA torture techniques. According to the National Front Party leader there, Marine Le Pen, she said on Saturday that the revelations in this CIA torture technique give France absolutely enough reason to leave NATO. So do you think France is going to leave NATO as a result of the CIA torture debacle? I don't think so. But interesting now that that the National Front Party leader, Marine Le Pen, is saying, this is a good indicator that we are mixed in with the wrong people right now. And I kind of agree with that. But will France actually leave NATO? I would be very surprised to hear that. So the Romanian ex-spy chief has now come out and acknowledged that the CIA did in fact have black prisons in the country. So now we had the story about Poland last week, right? And also, I've got Argentina in my head right now because Fernando is going to be on, but it was another one of those countries, ends in Stan, starts with A, and I can't think of the name right now, but another place where rendition prisons were obviously being held, and some of the heads of state coming out saying that those things were going on there. But now Ian Talps, who is the SIE agency, he's the lead of it, says Bucharest operated but took no interest in the sites as the country was trying to join NATO. I'll cut to the chase of this horror story here, guys. Ion Topples, he is the former head of the country's intelligence service, said the CIA had at least one center in Romania, possibly two, but they chose, as Romanian officials, to completely ignore the situation. But they were much, much more cooperative when it was informed to them that that their addition to NATO might be compromised if they weren't going to allow this. So their NATO membership actually happened back in March of 2004, and so they essentially NATO used the leverage of being involved with NATO to essentially stifle any type of communication going on inside of Romania having to do with the CIA black prisons. So there you go. They wanted to join NATO. In order to join NATO, we got to look away when you guys are torturing people on our property. And the Romanian ex-spy chief has come out and said, yep, that's absolutely 100% exactly what we did. So there you go. Let's see here. Another interesting story coming out of Breitbart today. The British Foreign Office has been caught funding training programs for North Korean propagandists. Yes, the British Foreign Office is paying for 46 North Korean journalists, and I'm using that term very lightly here, to take part in a quote-unquote media skills course. The FO claimed that the money is being put to good use by trying to engage with North Korea. But critics have accused the FO of naivety at best, pointing out that it's effectively funding spin doctors for the brutal and oppressive North Korean regime, according to the Sunday Express. But looks like the U.S. Department of Defense has paid $140 million to a foreign pharmaceutical firm and also chose African countries as a bioweapons testing. And so essentially what's going on is North Korea is looking at all of the money that we've spent doing all of those things and not really very happy about it, apparently. And they want more money because they feel like we have spent a lot of time poo-pooing North Korea. And so that's essentially what's going on right now. The program is called Inside Out, working in North Korea to connect its journalists to the internet world. It's being run by the Thomas Foundation, and it began with a 10-day workshop in Pyongyang back in October. Roughly right now, they believe they spent about $70,000 on the project. So we're getting more people in North Korea the capability of spinning stories, which is not really good, because another heartbreaking story that's come out of North Korea right now, which I imagine these guys, once they're trained up, will be much more adequate at keeping out of the mainstream. But North Korea doing weapon chemical testing on the disabled. Yikes. And this is absolutely horrifying report that's come out from the Independent UK. So they're basically saying North Korea experiments with chemical weapons on disabled children. They basically threaten families and say, you know, your children aren't fit to live here in North Korea. People like that should just die. So they either threaten the parents to take the children away, or if the parents refuse, well, they'll take the parents too. And then they're using things like anthrax and stuff like that on these kids. I mean, just disgusting. So good thing that UK is paying for people to become better journalists in the UK so they can hide more and more of stories like that. And thousands of protesters pled Polish streets during an opposition demonstration. Essentially what this comes down to is a huge, huge demonstration. Probably about 60,000 people came out into the capital of Warsaw on Saturday to denounce alleged irregularities in last month's election. There were a whole bunch of irregularities in the election, polling places losing power, things like that. So essentially, the people in Poland right now are saying that there's no way that that election was valid and are very, very up in arms about it. 60,000 of them pouring into the streets over the weekend. So, man, we see it more and more blowing up all over the place as people are just becoming more and more fed up. And I completely agree with them. You know, I'm getting fed up. I don't know what to do anymore. We're basically surrounded on all sides at this point. And, it's just getting ridiculous. You know, I'm going to get into the national news now. But I want to digress away for just a second. I got into a pretty heated discussion this weekend on some social media sites. There's a video that's going around of a young black man who is probably, he looks exactly like Michael Brown. I'll just say that. It's not Michael Brown. Snopes has already proven it wasn't Michael Brown, but this video has been making the rounds on the internet like crazy, showing up in all these conservative groups, talking about how Michael Brown was a thug and blah, blah, blah. And that's the story of the, you know, of the situation here. And I have a lot of problem with that because I do believe maybe he was a thug. Maybe he was. Maybe the cop was a killer cop too, but the system that's in place is what's creating those realities. It's not, I'm not trying to take responsibility away from everyone out there. All of us need to do, right by one another. But if you're forced into a situation where your education is poor and you're not given any type of real opportunities, and then, you know, all the media around you, the entertainment, everything is designed to make you into, what it is that the prison industrial complex wants you to be. I have to look at that. I can't just say, well, it's 100% this kid's fault, because I have to look at the situation where the kid came from. But people are really starting to get attuned to the fact that we are surrounded by fakeness, by everything that and that's one of the things, that I kind of got into a fight with over, this weekend, is these people are saying, it's not the system. It's not the system. The system works perfectly and blah, blah, blah. And I have to look and say, it's a scary world once you realize that everything is fake. If you realize that the political system is fake, if you realize that the entertainment system is fake, if you realize that the education system is fake, and for the most part, religion, not real, the money in your pocket, it's not real, the food in your fridge, that's not real, the weather, well, that's not real. Is there anything real left anymore? I mean, is there anything real out there anymore? I guess is my question. I don't know why I went on to that. But that's where my brain was this weekend, trying to figure out what is really going on and what you can actually look at that might be considered real anymore. And I don't know. I don't know if I found it yet. Okay, so moving into some national news right now, there's another Ferguson story coming out, and this one's not good either. The Ferguson witness, Sean Gray, who is a 23-year-old young man, was found dead over the weekend. This is another very strange coincidence or strange situation. The witness, 23-year-old Sean Gray, has been found dead. So the question obviously becomes, is somebody trying to cover something up, or is this just another tragic accident? And then we had a story a couple of weeks ago about a young man who was shot in his car and burnt to death, and nobody in the mainstream media even wanted to give this guy's name. And I said, day one, I said, this is a situation. This kid, he was burnt to death, shot in his car, right outside of the building that Michael Brown was lived in. I mean, we're talking in the neighborhood. You couldn't be more in the neighborhood unless he was a roommate. Well, I said immediately when that happened that guy either matched the description of a witness or he was a witness. It turned out that I was unfortunately 100% correct on that. His name was DeAndre Joshua. He was the young man who'd been shot and found in his car set on fire. He was a witness at the trial. So now we've seen two witnesses that have been removed. Obviously, is that a reaction to potentially them giving information that corroborated the, Daryl Wilson story? I don't know. that's pretty much the only thing I can think of, is that they were witnesses that didn't go in Michael Brown's direction. But they could have been witnesses that went in Michael Brown's direction, because we don't know who killed these people. So, again, a lot of conjecture going on. a lot of strange situations still revolving around that Ferguson story. And then and another kind of related to Ferguson story, well, it's coming out of Ferguson right now. Ferguson is getting ready to ratchet up the ticket fine collection, and they are trying to increase their ticket fine collection in the city by $1 million over next year. So right now, Ferguson gets about 40% of their municipal revenue from fees and fines, and they have chosen a fairly expensive way of taxing their population, obviously, with these fees and fines, and it obviously creates maximum hassle and maximum hostility. But they don't care. They're going to ramp it up even more. And what's interesting about this is there was actually a report that came out in Reason last week, and it was talking about America's number, the top three American most fee-ridden cities, where it was likely in America that if you lived, you would be the, you know, most subjected to fees and fines like that. And wouldn't you know it, Ferguson was number two on the list. Detroit, Michigan, Ferguson, Missouri, and Bell, California. So now Ferguson, Missouri announcing plans. They are going to ramp up their ticket and fine collection. And again, that to me means quotas. That's exactly what that means, because there's no other way to, you can't create a situation where people are committing more crime, right? You can't do that. All you can do is you can have more police on the streets and you can be ticketing more often, which means the only way to do that is to instill a quota. And if you instill a quota where you are forcing police officers to harass or to extort financial instruments out of people for no reason, that is extortion and that is oppression. And that is exactly why people are getting fed up, because that is not the role of law enforcement. Law enforcement is not designed to create funding revenue streams for my municipality. That's not what we're here to do. That's not part of the social contract, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, I'm digressing because I'm getting frustrated. Got more news to cover, lots and lots of good stuff. We're going to be back in 3 minutes, you guys. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. My name is JD, and we will be right back in 3 minutes. Keep it right here. Lots more national stuff. We've got some economic things to talk about, some crazy health news today, too. Keep it right here, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio, right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
The Covert Report with Susan Lindauer.
Saturday and Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Also, thank you guys for checking out the new chat room over at Truth Frequency Radio under the Listen Live link. This is great. There are a couple people in there and we're chatting away and just love it. Love the interaction with the listeners. So thank you guys for all being in there. I am going to put the hammer down here, guys. We got a lot of news to get through and not a lot of time. There's a breaking story right now coming out of Lansdale, Pennsylvania. This is a fourth scene of a shooting right now. There is a shooting spree that has taken place in Montgomery County. I am just doing everything I can to come up to date, and I'll get you guys in the know here. But so far, five different people have been found dead at three different locations in Souderton, Lansdale, and Lower Salford Township. And this is, of course, in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Meanwhile, the police are telling Action News that a suspect in the spree is believed to be barricaded inside a home at Penn and Highland Avenues in Souderton. The suspect is believed to be alive inside the home, and SWAT teams are right now taking positions outside. The first shooting was at 3:55 this morning. Second one came in about a half an hour later in the 100th block of West 5th in Lansdale. And officers arrived at that location to find two more people shot and dead. No idea what's going on there right now. There have been some children that were taken from the scene, not injured, so thank goodness for that. But that's what's going on right now in Pennsylvania. So if you're there and know anything that I don't know, hop into the chat room. Keep us up. Let us know what's going on. Try and keep you guys up to date on everything as it unfolds around us. We had this story about Ferguson going to increase their fees and fines, which means quotas, which means more oppression from law enforcement. Let's see here. In other news, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee is not finished with Jonathan Gruber, apparently. Just days after Mr. Gruber appeared at the marathon hearing before the committee, Daryl Issa issued a subpoena for Gruber demanding that he turn over all documents and communications with federal, state, and local officials related to the work that he's done on Obamacare. Not only did this guy earn $400,000 through a sole source contract with the DOHH, to help craft Obamacare, but he has also made a killing by selling himself as one of the architects of the law. He's also been contracted by at least eight states to assist with the creation of the Obamacare exchanges. And I'll tell you what, his little spiel the other day in front of Congress, or in front of the Oversight Committee was so glib. He just, man, I'll tell you, there are very few people that make me want to reach through my computer and slap someone in the face. But if you guys, somebody out there can create some sort of app for my iPhone or my Android that will allow me to slap someone through their phone, you will have my vote for president of the universe. Just saying, it's out there if you want to do it. Give me a way to slap somebody through my computer or through my phone, president of the universe. Okay. Reason article, fantastic article again, calling for a national police offender registry. I've gone over this and over this and over this. This whole idea that Barack Obama is going to spend all this money and put body cameras, which we know do nothing. You know, we've already seen people murdered by police on body camera and then gloat about it, and nobody gets in trouble. So obviously that plan is not effective. And then obviously the DOD changing the racial profiling for the federal law enforcement, doesn't do anything on the ground. So again, a local, a national police offenders registry absolutely needs to happen. We need to have a way to get these cops off the streets and make sure they don't end up working at a mall someplace or doing anything where they're able to have access to a taser or anything like that. And I'm just talking about the bad ones. I'm not talking about, man, there was a fantastic story. Gosh, I wish I had 6 hours to go over news today, but it was a fantastic story from, I want to say it was in Michigan. I'm going to have to go find a story for you guys, but a police officer responded to a robbery or a shoplifting offense. So it was a shoplifting offense. A woman was at the dollar store. She was trying to buy a dozen eggs and couldn't afford them. Okay. So she realized she didn't have enough money. She went and tried to put the eggs back. But while she was back putting the eggs away, she actually slipped five of them into her pocket. And so obviously, you know, the police department found it or got called. They showed up. And instead of the police officer arresting this woman, he decided it would probably be more – I'm sorry. This was in Alabama, not in Michigan. So I've got the story here now. It is in the Daily News on the website too, so if you guys check it out. Instead of arresting her, bought her a dozen eggs. So okay, that's pretty cool, right? Could have done a lot worse, decided, no, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to give this woman – a carton of eggs. He bought her a carton of eggs. But then, over the weekend, he showed up with a whole bunch of other police officers, and they brought this woman an entire truckload of food, and they stocked her kitchen a week before Christmas. I'm getting all beklempt. I'm sorry. But I love stories like this. Oh my God, it just makes me so happy when police officers do the right thing by their community. Because I'll tell you what, you know, this woman is a black woman. She has children. What do you think the impression of police officers that was left with these children is now? Do you think they're afraid of cops now? Or do you think, man, police officers are pretty awesome? You know, I mean, that one thing happening in one community can change the dynamic so much. I cannot support police officers like this enough. And Officer William Stacy was his name. Tarrant Officer William Stacy from Alabama. So my hat's off to you, sir. I had to get away from the bad news to get into that quick story there just because I think that is just really awesome. And then speaking of also awesome, maybe this is just me tooting my own horn or, you know, maybe this isn't something that you guys find awesome, but I'm pretty excited about this. Congress has officially ended the war against medical marijuana. It happened this weekend. This is a landmark moment for cannabis law reform in the United States, guys. The House of Representatives approved a measure late Thursday night to defund the federal war on medical marijuana. Ah, I'm so happy right now. The provision passed the Senate Saturday and is expected to be signed by President Barack Obama, bringing a halt to the 3-year-long Medipot crackdown in California and other states. So, essentially, this amendment to the $1.1 trillion cromnibus spending bill blocked the use of Department of Justice funds to prevent medical marijuana states from implementing their own state laws that authorize use, distribution, possession, and cultivation of medical marijuana. The vast majority of Americans, 78%, support state rights to allow access to cannabis. And I could not be happier about this. What a waste of money we have spent. Oh my gosh, just countless billions of dollars fighting a plant. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Speaking of also ridiculous, Lois Lerner back in the news again. Apparently those little emails between her and the Department of Justice, well, they do in fact show quite a bit of collusion regarding the supposed targeting of conservative groups, as the Justice Department now has been shown to be helping the IRS in that respect. So days are getting shorter and shorter for Lois Lerner, in my opinion. Just absolutely unbelievable that this story continues to unfold. So we'll keep an eye on that. But now the DOJ being dragged into the IRS mess. It's really too bad that those emails didn't actually go away when the hard drive crashed, because that's, you know, doesn't actually happen. So That is what's going on in your national news right now. I'm going to jump over and try and get into some financial stuff right now. Obviously, this drop in oil revenues is a big deal. There's been some indication now that this could actually start a self-triggered, self-reinforcing feedback dynamic, which will absolutely really, really hinder the economy. And a lot of people may not understand why oil is so important, because it's not just fuel. It's capital. It's collateral. It's debt and it's risk. So it is intentionally and intrinsically financial. Let's start with the obvious stuff and talk about the impact of lower oil that is financial, political, and or geopolitical. No, lower oil revenues are going to negatively impact the oil exporters' revenues, which is obviously the United States, the monetary policy for the central banks of the world, the trade flows of anybody who deals with this financial instrument known as oil, and also the global financial markets. So lower revenues are pressuring oil-dependent governments like Russia, Venezuela, and Iran, and destabilizing the geopolitical order as weakened oil exporters sink into recession and political turmoil. Let's jump over and see where oil is. Wow, my goodness. Oil down below $57 a barrel right now, down almost 2% just today, $56.81 for a barrel of crude oil right now. And what is it, UAE, the UAE is hinting that we may actually see $40 oil here before too long. And even despite that, OPEC is saying even if we do see $40 oil, they do not plan on changing any of their production rates. And even if it does hit 40, they're not planning on having another meeting until June. So, yeah, they're pretty much locked in at this point to the decisions that they've made so far. Getting into gold real quick. Gold down just a touch today, 1214, kind of a flat trade. It's been up and down, but really staying just above 1200 for the last month or so. Silver following suit with a little bit of a dip down to $16.88. And the Dow down 100 points in early trading right now to 17,181. That's not a good thing, because if you take the whole week of last week, I think last week we saw about a 1,000-point drop. And so, you know, in its totality. And so, still falling today. So there you go. That's what's going on in the economy. We'll talk a little bit with Fernando about some of the economic, instances that took place in Argentina before the collapse there, and see if we can draw some corollaries in our, interview at the 11 o'clock hour. So just about 20 more minutes there. Let's see here. Also, like clockwork, this is being reported by Mike Adams over at Natural News. When societies approach collapse, coercion shifts to outright theft, stealing money right out of your bank account. And obviously we've seen that happen in Cyprus already, with the government targeting pension funds and even private retirement accounts. But just like clockwork, just like we said, looting of pension plans is now about to commence here in the United States. And this is a quote: Congress could soon allow the benefits of current retirees to be cut as part of an agreement to address the fiscal distress confronting some of the nation's 1,400 multi-employer pension plans. This is Michael Fletcher from the Washington Post. He goes on to continue that this proposal would devastate retirees and their surviving spouses. The proposal would also torpedo basic protections of the federal private pension law that states that once benefits are earned, they cannot be cut back. But this is essentially a declaration of war against the American worker. The fact that these wholesale thefts of pension funds is now underway has not escaped union workers and retirees also. As Washington Post also reports, this is nothing less than a declaration of war by Congress on American retirees. And this is Thomas Bufenbarger, who is the international president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. So the unions are fully on board. They fully are aware that this is what is going on, and I imagine that we'll see some pretty major kick-up when it comes to that. Probably doesn't need to be said again. There's a great Zero Hedge article right now talking about the major warning signal that the bubble has just burst, and it's talking, of course, about the high-yield bonds or the junk bonds. And this is a great article. Again, you can go find it over at redpillreports.com under the show section. But essentially, the bond, junk bond market is collapsing right now, ladies and gentlemen. We are watching it happen, and I think that this is the writing is on the wall at this point. We're seeing the energy sector bleeding over into the junk bond future sector, which are taking some major, major hits right now. So we'll have to see what's going to happen here. Again, we'll talk to Fernando in the next hour about some corollaries between us and Argentina. But that is where we're at right now. Hope you guys are all somewhat prepped out there and ready to go here. I'm going to check over at the cool. I like seeing you guys in the chat room. That's cool. Let's move into some tech news right now because there are some pretty cool things going on. I want to draw your attention to, how about an invisible umbrella? Yeah, it's happened over at Kickstarter right now. The Invisible Air Umbrella. It's already raised over $30,000. Their whole goal was $10,000, so they've hit that threefold. But this is pretty neat little device right here. It essentially looks like a walking stick with kind of a ball on the top, and that ball is got a fan mounted inside, and you kick that fan on, and it absolutely makes a shield of air that will keep you dry. What's cool about that is obviously, you know, there's a lot, I don't know if you really need to concern yourself with umbrellas, but they can get flipped inside out. They get wet. You can't open them inside or it's bad luck. There's all kinds of constraints to having an umbrella. This one looks pretty neat to me. So I'd recommend everybody go check that out because I think that's pretty cool. Let's see here also. There has been an indicator coming out from Washington also. And this is kind of a goofy story, but they're talking about a small drone that some kids have made that is capable of cracking your Wi-Fi passwords. And so it flies around. It's an unmanned drone, and it can land near you and then pick up your cell phone stuff or your data or whatever. Okay, so fantastic. These guys have got this little spy drone or whatever. Let's talk about how to stay safe from this, ladies and gentlemen, because a lot of people probably don't know that the way this device works, and this is not a new invention. These guys essentially took a drone and they put a Wi-Fi pineapple on it, which is a device that I own and you can look up online. It's about $100. But what the pineapple does and what their drone does is, it looks for signatures from your phone. So you've got an iPhone, you've got an Android phone, you've got your laptop computer, you got your mobile tablet, whatever. When you connect to a safe network, like at home, say you got Wi-Fi at home and you connect your phone to your Wi-Fi network, your phone always asks you, do you want me to remember this connection? Most people say, yeah, sure, because that way I don't have to put the password in every time I come home. The trouble is that if you have a phone for like 10 years or 5 years or 2 years or whatever, you probably have added, you know, 50 or 60 different Wi-Fi connections to your phone. Well, a lot of people don't know, but when you take your phone out into public, your phone is screaming. It's saying, anybody recognize me? Is there any Wi-Fi networks that I've been connected with around me right now that I could then connect with again and be all cozy and happy with? Well, the pineapple does exactly that. It sits on the table or on your drone, as it were, in this particular case, and your phone says, hey, is that one connection that I connected to 6 months around? And your Wi-Fi pineapple says, heck yeah, buddy, long time no see. Why don't you go ahead and hook up to me and share all your secrets? And that's how it works, guys. It's $100. They put it on a drone. They can fly it around, land it on your roof, and soak up all your stuff. So here's the deal. Go into your phones and your electronic doodads that have those Wi-Fi connections and erase all the ones that you're not using. Erase the one from the Starbucks that you haven't been to because you don't live in Oregon anymore. Erase the one that's the Wi-Fi at the community college that you went to that one time that you've never been back to. Erase those because those are places where people can infiltrate your phone and your devices, and that's exactly how this Wi-Fi drone works. I don't even have to read the article. So that's what's going on there. How about while we're in the pre-Christmas season here still, and I like to talk about tech things in case there are people out there that might like to have some Christmas gifts. How about a robotic bartender? Yes, a robotic bartender that can make you your favorite drink in 5 seconds. How cool is this? It's called the Sama Bar. It lets anyone create craft cocktails in their home, matter of seconds. It has 6 different pods, which are pre-filled. You put whatever you want in them, and then it will take the necessary ingredients from them and put it into your glass. 5 seconds. You can also control it with your phone. It will recognize you and make your drink the exact same way, so you want to custom make it a little stronger or a little weaker or anything like that. I think this is awesome. I would love to have a robotic bartender at home. So if anybody's looking for a last-minute Christmas gift for the office here at Red Pill Reports, that or a margarita mixer, we could probably go down on on one of those. Let's see here. What else is going on in the big old news here? There is a new smartphone application, which I am very, very pleased to be promoting right now, and it's called Peacekeeper. This is a free smartphone app that creates a community response service. So in a world where the police are just minutes away, you remember that seconds count when you are in an emergency situation. So this particular application, as I said, it's free. You can get it with all of your friends, and it allows you to create a trusted network of people who are around you that can respond much faster in the event of an emergency when police can't be there. So you can have your phone, you can hit, you know, one of the four emergency type qualifications that it's got, like a fire or a medical emergency or a robbery or something like that, and you can alert a group of people who probably live closer to you than the police department. You know, your neighbors, your friends, your family, everybody that's around you, and then actually, you know, work to solve the problem much quicker. And, you know, these days, too, having a law enforcement officer come to your home, there's been a lot of horror stories about law enforcement officers coming to people's homes and not really doing their jobs, or not doing their job to the way that people would expect them to do their jobs. You know, we got pets being shot, or there was the young boy, can't remember, it was probably 6 months ago, who was, I want to say he was disabled and was having a fight with his mother, and so they called the police, and the police showed up, said they didn't have time for this, and they killed the kid right in front of his parents. So I don't really want police officers coming to my house. I would much rather have a trusted group of people around me that I already knew, that knew how to respond, and that knew that I knew were going to be here with my best interest and my pet's best interest in heart. So this is something I am really a big fan of. So go check it out. It's on Android. It's on iPhone also. It's got a real-time chat feature, so you can be chatting with the people that you're talking to in real time. They can know exactly what's going on. I would go to this before I went to 911 personally. It's called Peacekeeper. Go find it at the Android or the iPhone links there. Definitely very cool, and highly recommend that also. Let's see here. Moving away from the technical stuff, I'm gonna go over into some health news here really quickly, because there are just a few stories. I love this. There's a fantastic letter that somebody has written. And again, if you go to redpillreports.com and get into the show section, you can find this. But it's in the health section, and it's called, "You Want to Vaccinate My Child? Sure, no problem. Just sign this form." And this is a form. It's available in English, Spanish, and French right now, and it is a PDF. You can print it out. It essentially says, you're my physician, you're going to sign your name here, you're going to tell me where you got your practice, your license to practice medicine, you're going to fill all this stuff out, you're going to talk to me about what vaccinations you want to put in my kids, and then you tell me the risk factor that correlates to each one. I want you to sign something that says that you recognize that any of the vaccines you're about to give my kid may include a list of any of the following ingredients, and they list like 50. All of them are scary. We're talking about dog kidneys and monkey kidneys and animal tissues and aluminum phosphates and, I mean, everything. So you're going to basically put this in front of a doctor and say, okay, you are telling me that it's your job and it's my duty to put this stuff into my children. I want you to sign this. And then at the very bottom it says, I want you to sign this and say, these are the steps that I'm going to take to guarantee that the vaccines that I'm going to give your kids will cause no damage and have no damaging contaminants inside them. To date, there has not been a doctor that is willing to sign this form, but I find that to be very interesting. So there's another tool for your toolbox. You can get that in front of people that may be thinking about vaccinating their child too, because even if they are not going to show it to their doctor, there's a lot of good information in this form, and everybody, I think, needs to be looking at that. And then, wow, we had that discussion with LC Vincent on a couple of weeks ago about how the Rockefellers were instrumental in changing the tone that we consider to be A, which in nature would be 432 megahertz. The Rockefellers working institutionally to change that to 440 to create dis-ease through frequency. So we already kind of have this sneaking suspicion Rockefellers may not have our best interests at heart, but Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton did a fantastic report this weekend because they found get this, they found an article from a 1915 newspaper, which was the Salem Daily Capital Journal. It was printed November 4th, 1915, and it is talking about, and the title of the article, Rockefeller Jr. on Eugenic Problems. That is the title of the article. It is about a play produced by the Rockefellers called The Unborn. And Rockefeller Jr. goes on to say, for the first time in dramatic history, the perplexing problem of the limitation of undesirable offspring, which has been engaging the attention of thoughtful eugenists and sociologists all the world over, is dealt with on the stage in a play that they are producing, they being the Rockefellers there. The right of the child to be well born and the right of the wife to decide about it are problems, the solution of which society can no longer ignore. This is what propaganda looked like before we had television, ladies and gentlemen. The Rockefellers funding a stage play pushing a eugenics depopulation agenda all the way back in 1915. This is insane. So, okay, at first, it kind of sounds like a modern-day birth control and a woman's right to choose, right? And obviously, the Rockefellers, if you've been following them, massive financial backers and drivers of abortion and birth control for decades now. But that is not what this is about. The key words in this article are undesirable, which in this context means something a lot different, and well-born, or the right of a child to be well-born. They're not talking about the right of the child. They're talking about if the child is quote-unquote undesirable or not. And I'm saying that because just a few months earlier, the Rockefellers also appeared in multiple articles about the new eugenics enterprise printed in papers across the country, like one here that we've got from the Washington Herald. This was September 3rd, 1915. And the headline, 15 million Americans defective. 15 million Americans defective. The subheadline being gigantic eugenic enterprise organized for sterilization of unfit of the nation. I mean, could you possibly get any more direct? This one obviously discusses the joint eugenics venture between Ms. Harriman, who is the mother of future statesman and Skull and Bones Secret Society member Averell Harriman, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, and the scientist Andrew Graham Bell, the guy who invented the telephone, who was also apparently a huge eugenicist. But apparently John D. and Co. were giving liberal financial assistance, which you can read as millions of dollars, to fund a gigantic eugenic enterprise to ascertain what is the matter with the human race. To ascertain what is the matter with the human race. I'll tell you what the matter with the human race is. It's the Rockefellers, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll tell you what, look into black genocide. You know that more than 50% of black children in this country are never born because of abortion clinics. That is a true statistic. More than 50% black children never born. I can guarantee that the Rockefellers had something to do with that. Anyway, I'm digressing. That was the news for the day. There's lots more to cover. We'll be on the phone with Fernando 3 minutes, guys. Be right back.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media, Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker for free. Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at LibertyStickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com. Because silence is consent.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MFUSA.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming, and we are moving into the second hour of our broadcast today and are very, very excited to be joined by Fernando Aguirre today. He is the editor of the modernsurvivalist.com, which is a fantastic website that relates to everything that you could possibly want to know about self-sustaining lifestyle, about prepping, about being ready for the events that might be forthcoming in the near future. He is recognized in the survival and preparedness community for his firsthand experience and practical approach to survivalism, which he gained by living through the socioeconomic collapse of Argentina, and subsequently he bugged out of Argentina. So we're going to be talking to him quite a bit about that. We'll talk a lot about the modernsurvivalist.com and also his two books. He's got a book called The Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse, and he also has a more recently published second book called Bugging Out and Relocating, When Staying Put is Not an Option. And I think there are probably a lot of people, Fernando, here in the States that might be kind of starting to lean towards that whole bugging out type of option, because things are getting a little bit crazy. But before we get into all that, Mr. Aguirre, I was hoping you could give us just a little bit more insight into your background, if you'd be so kind.
Hi, John. It's great talking with you. Yeah, as you mentioned, I've lived most of my life in Buenos Aires, in Argentina. I was there when things got ugly back in 2001 with the economic collapse after the currency devaluated, the banks froze people's accounts, you couldn't get money out of the banks and such. It was a pretty complicated time. The president resigned. We ended up having five different presidents in a week, which I think is kind of a first.
That's got to be a record, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny that no one wanted to be a president of a country. You know, it's curious.
It is.
So yeah, it was complicated, and pretty much years of problems followed after that. After a few months, things calmed down a little bit, but never went back to being the same. It was a different country after that, more unstable, more uncertainty in all aspects. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was life for us for practically a decade. And until we decided to leave, we saw things getting even worse than what they already were. So we said, okay, this is enough. So we're going to be leaving. And that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's walk through the whole spectrum then, because, you know, obviously things were good there once, right? And then it started to get bad. And then you say it kind of calmed down after that, but it never really got back to being as good as it was. So talk to us a little bit about what it was like, what, you know, what the high water mark of Argentina was for you growing up there, and then talk about some of the events as you kind of move through that transition to it getting really bad. I mean, was it a quick transition, or were there a lot of things that you could see kind of coming down the pike, or did everybody get taken, you know, off guard? How did that all happen?
Yeah, it's pretty complex because you have certain things happening all of a sudden, some other things slowly decline. Argentina, just to put things into perspective, the peak of Argentina was around the same time in which the United States was going through its worst period, in 1929, when the world was suffering quite an economic problem. Argentina was the fourth GDP of the world, so it was pretty well off.
Mm-hmm.
It was doing actually quite well, providing food for a country that was in between wars. So you have a country that has lots of natural resources. It has a lot of land and not a lot of population, and it still is that way. The problem is that the political class in the country always takes advantage of people and exploits the resources in awfully poor ways. Corruption would be the main problem in the country. So in spite of all this, around 1980, 1990s, you would still be making more money, as in more dollars, working in Argentina than working in the United States. For the average middle-class worker, it was more profitable for you in dollars to work in Argentina as a manager than doing the same in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. So you're talking about a country that was actually doing pretty well. Now, the problem is that on the behind scenes, you have a country that had been destroying its national industry. You have a country that had been going into debt more and more. So, as we all know, that cannot go on forever. It eventually ends up falling apart. And we saw little signs. You saw unemployment little by little getting worse. You saw inflation. Mm-hmm. You saw the infrastructure suffering a lot. And at the end of the day, it ended up defaulting on its debts, $132 billion. It ended up defaulting on it in 2001. Banks closed their doors, and they converted people's money, those that had their accounts in U.S. dollars. Those were converted to pesos at a loss of pretty much a 60-70% loss of your savings.
Did that happen like over a weekend? I mean, we always talk in our country, there's always like a conspiracy. Oh, there's going to be a bank holiday and they're going to restructure the money over a long weekend and everybody's going to lose. Is that what happened in Argentina?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Oh,
and
wow.
There's tons of stories of people that my mother-in-law, she went to the bank the day before this happened, and she had been hearing rumors, and she asked her trusted bank manager, right? Is this true? Is this happening? And she was told, no, that's all nonsense. None of that is going to be happening. The
right.
Following day, they closed the doors. They converted people's accounts to devaluated pesos, and they froze everyone's accounts.
Wow. Well, if that's not a moral, never trust a bank manager, I don't know how you could be more clear on that one.
Yeah,
wow.
You have to understand that the bank is there to make money, not to help you, not to be your pal or anything. Yep. They're there to make money.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to start looking at some corollaries between what you're describing to me as kind of the initiating factors, the little things that you started witnessing, you know, the unemployment happening, the inflation happening, the infrastructure starting to fail is obviously a huge issue here in the United States. I think they estimate like 40% of the bridges out there are, you know, destined to kill half the country in the next 20 days or something like that every time I hear it. But one of the things that, and this, I think that we crossed over from rumor into reality just over this weekend, because I've actually now seen some photographs and some videos of the event that I'm going to describe. But I have it on pretty good authority right now that all of the first floor windows at the Federal Reserve Building in Chicago, which that building is a one square city block. I mean, we're talking about a massive, massive building, and it's always had windows in the bottom with bars on them, you know, since when it was built. They are bricking those up right now, and I have seen the pictures of it. So, you know, the Federal Reserve to me seems like they're starting to circle the wagons a little bit. And we also had the story, I don't know if you caught it, but the Treasury Department last week announced that they were sending bug out bags to every major bank and every major bank employee. Seriously, like fanny packs with,
right.
You know, multi-calories and, emergency water and like, you know, what you would consider to be like a get home bag, so to speak. So I see those two events, you know, the bricking up of the federal buildings and, the giving of them, these bug out bags.
That's in fact pretty concerning. If they close their windows, they're anticipating people being very upset with them, and they're preparing for quite a bit of unrest around it.
Mm-hmm. Did we see that in Argentina? Was there a lot of unrest?
Absolutely. I mean, right. It wasn't as well planned as you would expect the Federal Reserve to do. I mean, if they're planning on doing something like that, of course they're fortifying their banks. What happened is that many banks did not expect so much of the people being so upset with them so fast. But in just a few days, you saw these laminated metal walls being placed around the banks, and people were just banging on the doors. You know, just demanding their money. You have to understand that people actually died because they couldn't afford operations, surgery that they needed, life-saving surgery, having the money in the bank. They didn't manage to get a judge to force the bank to give them back their money so as to save their lives. I mean, they had the money for the operation, but the bank would not give it to them, and they ended up dying because of that.
Well, and you know, what astounds me about this is that we're not talking about a third world country in 1970 or something. We're talking about a first world country, not even, you know, 2001. That's not that long ago.
No, I mean,
we're talking about modern times, you know?
Yeah, Argentina is maybe not what you would see in terms of a developed nation comparable to the United States, of course. But within the context, and until really not that long ago, in 1990s, it was by far the best, the country with the best social and standards of living in the region, no doubt whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it went from being without a doubt the best country to be in terms of standards of living to being one of the actually around the middle, or actually one of the worst, with Bolivia and Peru and Colombia, which used to be far worse, being mm-hmm. better than Argentina right now.
Wow. Okay, so Fernando, were you always a prepper? I mean, did you already kind of have a plan together before all this happened, or was it actually watching the slow roll of the fall that kind of made you say, okay, I need to step away from whatever it was I was doing and really get
right.
prepped?
I always enjoyed the outdoors. I always liked camping. I was very interested in wilderness survival, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I really did like from an early age. I mean, very little, I was always interested in that. Later on, I was interested in firearms as well, so I started to learn taking classes on shooting. But I quickly realized that many of the things that I liked from survival that were mostly regarding wilderness survival, or some of the things you today see in terms of being referred as bushcraft, that really didn't help much for what we were seeing in the country, you know.
Right.
All the bushcrafting skills in the world would not do you any difference for that kind of problem.
Right.
So I started learning more as things developed, but I did have the advantage of having some previous knowledge, and of course having firearms and knowing how to use them was of course beneficial as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you essentially then moved from being a bushcraft, you know, aficionado to somebody who said, well, this urban survival thing, because of where I'm
yes.
at, obviously going to be way more important. But what strikes me is that you didn't leave for Ireland until what, 2009? Is that correct?
Yeah, it was actually, I think it's, man, almost.
Or was it 2011? Okay.
Yeah, so, I think it was 2011, almost 3 years or something like that.
So you spent a decade in Argentina after, you know,
yes.
things went bad. What kind of stuff can you tell us about that decade that you spent there, especially given that you got to now hone up on urban survival skills? Like, what are some of the things that you learned that you had to implement in that first decade before you decided
to
leave?
Around 2001, I went realizing what I was just mentioning about the difference between wilderness survival and urban survival. I bought several books, started reading them, and they really didn't help much for the kind of things that we were seeing over there. They were mostly rehashed things about wilderness survival being brought into an urban environment, but not really helpful. You start learning little things. I especially paid a lot of attention to self-defense and security, which was the big problem in Argentina. The crime problem was outrageous. You really had to be prepared for being ready in terms of kidnappings, in terms of home invasions, in terms of crime on the streets. So that was a security and self-defense is a big part. Uh-huh. When I wrote my first book, which is, you mentioned it before, the Modern Survival Manual, I wrote it because many of these things that I was learning, I knew that they weren't available anywhere else. So I paid special attention to that. Defensive driving, for example, another thing that it's not often mentioned, but it's very important as well. You spend a lot of time in your vehicle, carjackings as well. It happened with certain frequency. So it's different skills that not always get covered, but are definitely important.
Right. And I don't know anything about firearm laws down in Argentina, but what were some of the special considerations that you had to make in order to be more confident in your ability to protect yourself and your family and things like that?
Well, gun laws are not really that bad in Argentina. They're not, of course, as good as in the United States, but basically you can have pretty much any kind of handgun. You can have rifles, shotguns. The only thing would be like for center fires, magazine fed semi-automatic rifles and carbines, mm-hmm. and you know like ARs, AKs. That's very tricky. Actually, it's almost impossible unless you are a firearms collector, which I am. I'm a firearms collector and a firearms instructor as well, besides taking numerous classes on defensive shooting. Uh-huh. But it wasn't that bad. The thing is that you have to not only have the firearm, you need a training as well. A lot of people just buy the gun, don't know how to use it, and yes. It's like having a car and not knowing how to drive.
Yeah.
You need to have that training as well.
Uh-huh. I'm always stricken by, if you go to, there's all kinds of YouTube videos of children in Russia, you know, where one of the classes in their school will be field stripping and reassembling an AR, and these kids are like, you know, like 12 years old, and I just always think, man, how much better off would our country be in terms of our individual capabilities if we were, you know, teaching kids these important things? Not
well,
that field stripping an AR is important, but, you know, being
right.
prepared to deal with a weapon, that's important, you know?
It used to be much more common. I mean, in my school back in Argentina, they used to have shooting as a class. It was target shooting.
Man.
And you started with an air rifle, and then they moved you on to a Mauser rifle.
Wow. See, I think that's something that we're totally missing in our country these days. But okay, so then you spent a decade there. You kind of honed your urban survival. Obviously, you survived the event because we're talking to you now. But at some point, you just said, okay, enough is enough. I'm calling no joy and I'm bugging out. So what was there a series of events or was there just one day where you just said, I can't handle this anymore. I got to get out of here. What actually happened that led you to?
Correct. The standards of living really changed quite fast from December 2001 after the economy in the country collapsed. Okay.
Uh-huh.
From 2001 to 2002. It was a pretty big change. The country fell apart and it started getting slowly back on its feet, but politically it became a huge mess as well. The people that came to power were extremely authoritarian in their ways, which, you know, the political problem is also very important because if you have with corruption, you cannot fix anything. If you have a corrupt government,
uh-huh.
That's pretty much the worst thing that you could have. Everything else you can fix as long as there's a will. But when
right.
you have corrupt people in charge, it's pretty much impossible. So what we saw is that after December 2001, the country wasn't really getting better. It was just getting used to being worse. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I think we could call what's happening in the States right now with that exact same title. I mean, I think that's what's happening here.
It's not
recovery?
Improving. You're just getting used to living in a different way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it kept on getting worse. I mean, each passing year, I mean, we had for a decade, you're talking about 25-30% inflation each year.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of inflation.
What did that look like in terms of products on the street, though? Give us some ideas of what that actually looked like.
It basically looks the following way. It's more expensive to buy food in Argentina than to buy food in the United States or in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of thing. People don't trust the economy. They don't trust the money that they have in their pocket because they know that it's melting. The moment they have it in the pocket or in the bank account, they know that it's melting like ice.
Right.
It's losing its value that fast. And if you combine that with the problem of crime, it wasn't really living. It was surviving and basically having your life on hold for years.
Uh-huh.
Now, I didn't want to run scared out of Argentina. I didn't want to become a refugee or anything like that.
Right.
I wanted to take my time, and my goal was actually to move to the United States. That's why I waited so long to actually leave.
Oh, okay.
But as we were talking about before, it's much trickier to get into the United States than a lot of people would be led to believe, being the amount of illegals that there are over
right.
there.
You mean it's tricky to try and do it the right way, is what
exactly.
You're saying.
Okay. If you want to do it the wrong way, apparently that's okay. If you want to do it the right way, you're not allowed.
So what kind of constraints were you fighting trying to get the American citizenship? Like what actually did you try, and what shut that program down?
You need the kind of visa that you need basically requires, you have different visas, of course. You have one for students, and you have one for skilled workers, but you basically need someone with a company hiring you from the United States.
Okay.
That's really not easy at all. It's especially not easy these days.
Uh-huh.
And we waited a lot of time. I tried figuring it out, but as years went by, and at the same time, the country, Argentina, kept getting worse and worse each passing year. Eventually, we decided to, you know, this isn't going to be, we're not supposed to live this way anymore. We're going to be leaving, especially after the last re-election of the current president, which is Cristina Kirchner in Argentina. After her last re-election, it would be her last term. I knew that after the re-election, she would be doing everything that she hadn't dared do before. So it was just a matter of weeks. After she got re-elected, she started with some outrageous currency bans and restrictions. Imports got heavily restricted as well. You start seeing crazy things like convicts having political affiliations and being allowed to get out of prison because they were involved in the government.
Oh, wow.
All these outrageous things, censorship, lots of heavy censorship regarding the media.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting scary, so we decided to leave.
Is that when they initiated the capital controls too, in terms of limiting your ability to buy gold and then diversify your money? Did that happen in Argentina also?
Yeah, they have. I mean, officially speaking, they're not banning anything. Nothing is banned. That's the funny thing. They always try to put things in terms of, we're not doing anything. We're not banning anything.
Yeah.
If you want to buy, but for example, if you want to buy $50, you have to present this and this paperwork. You have to get authorized. And once you request that, if you're not allowed to buy it, then it's not that it's banned. It's simply that you were not allowed to do it.
Oh, wow.
It's that kind of little tricks and things they pull. But at the end of the day, for all practical reasons, it's heavily controlled and pretty much banned to any practical extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like ammunition here in the country. You know, a lot of people think that the United States wants to ban guns. Obviously, that's not ever going to happen. There aren't enough police
right.
in the world to come and take guns away from people. But what they have done is they have decided to stop recycling the brass from the military. So when all the military is finished using all their training rounds, they destroy that brass and they send it to China, which is totally new. They used to resell that brass back onto the market, recoup some of their
right.
funds, and hunters, people buy those, you know, that brass to remake weapons. And then so, because they're not reusing their brass and they're not able to recoup from the recycling of it, they're purchasing, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of rounds, really working hard to limit people's ability to get ammunition. And so I think, you know, it just sounds to me exactly like what you're describing in Argentina with being able to buy gold. It's not like it's not available, but they're going to work behind the scenes to make it as absolutely difficult as they possibly
exactly.
can. And that's what we seem, you know, it seems like every agenda that you look at, you could kind of fall down. What strikes me is that the situation in Argentina does not seem that much different than what we're experiencing right now in the United States. I guess that's where I'm going with all this.
Yeah. And that's concerning.
Yeah.
And it's scary because you wonder politically as well, can the United States survive much longer with that kind of things going on behind scenes with all this trickery and manipulation of the law so as to restrict people's liberties and freedoms? How long can it stand, and how long can the United States still be the United States with this going on?
Yeah. I don't know at this point, man. I mean, that is obviously the question that's on the table right now, but every day the news keeps coming in. You know, we're watching oil right now. I just got an indicator from the chat room. Also, guys, if you're out there, go to thetruthfrequencyradio.com and get into the chat room, and you can send us some questions. If you've got questions for Fernando, I can read them here. But somebody just indicated to me in the chat room that we might be below $56 for a barrel of oil just before the end of the show here today, which to me, you know, that's a pretty telling thing when you think about the energy market in our country being predominantly the shale market right now. You know, $56 oil or sub $60 oil is really going to have a major effect on the economy here in the United States. And I don't think people are really prepared for that yet, you know?
Yeah, it's I guess there's lots of factors involved, but the price of oil is a concerning indication. What I always try to tell people and always try to make the point of, it's not about being scared or worried. It's about having a common sense approach to things, understanding what's going on so as to be better prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
The world is not going to be ending all of a sudden. It's not going to be blowing up in flames and such, but you need to know what's going on so as to be better prepared for it, so as to not get caught by it by surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's something I'd like to talk about. We're going to have to go to a break in just about a minute and a half here. So I do want to recommend everybody go to themodernsurvivalist.com. Fantastic site, man. You did that video about the kibble for people the other day. I don't know if you saw my message in the text. I bought that exact rice cooker. I mean, I watched your video, went onto Amazon, spent the $26. It should be here this week because I thought it was awesome. And I love a lot of the stuff on your site. I think that there's all kinds of fantastic information that people can glean from that, and I think that going to themodernsurvivalist.com, obviously something I want to highly recommend that people do today. But I do want to find out why it was that you went to where you went, and I'll leave that until after the break. But there's just so much going on, and I'm really glad that you just touched on one of the main questions that I have about survival and prep. A lot of people spend a lot of time in the physical realm. They say, I got to get my bullets and my bullion and my beans and my whatever other things that start with B that I need to have. But they don't spend a lot of time in the mental prep department where they, you know what I mean? Like, you know, yes. Obviously you can be prepared, but if the event actually happens, I think a lot of people aren't going to be mentally prepared to deal with it. We're all going to be struggling to try and find normalcy and trying to, you know, hoping that things are going to get back on track. But it's in that time of hope that you really need to be active and moving and doing things like that. So I want to come back from the break just about 3 minutes, and we'll talk to Fernando a little bit about that, about some of the pertinent information that we can glean from his books. And so definitely keep it right here, guys. 3 minute break. We'll be right back with Fernando Aguero.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube. We're bringing a whole bunch of great new additions to YouTube. First of all, we're leveling the playing field by entirely removing subscriptions. You know how we've been phasing out subscriptions and making them less and less important by taking them off your home screen? Well, now subscriptions are non-existent. Everyone is equal. YouTubers that put in hours and hours of effort to make quality videos will be at the same level as 12-year-old Call of Duty gamers and video bloggers. Now you might be asking, how do I know what to watch now? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos we think you'll like. Did you accidentally click on a My Little Pony video once? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos just like that.
YouTube Plus. We own 99% of the content creators.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable.
Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys are enjoying our guest today, Mr. Fernando Aguirre. His website is themodernsurvivalist.com. I highly, highly recommend it as a site. It's a one-stop source for getting all of this type of preparatory information, things that will make your life better, life hacks and things like that. Fernando, before we went to the break, we were kind of talking about the two-stage plan that went down for you in Argentina, the first one being getting very good at urban survival, and the second one being, I'm getting out of here. So we're kind of talking about the bug-out portion right now. And I have to be honest, I'll just say it. You bugged out to Ireland. And, you know, as somebody here has been in the States and been paying attention for a long time, I've got a list. I've got a bug out location list. And I got to be honest, Ireland is not on it. It's not even, wouldn't have even been a consideration. Why did you choose Ireland, to bug out to?
Well, first of all, as I was mentioning before, United States would have been my first option.
Right.
To be completely honest, if I could be in the United States, that's where I would be. It has its problems with immigration and such, but if that's not an issue for you, U.S. it would be the way to go. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not other places that are good as well. In fact, to be completely honest as well, many things actually are even better in some other places. For example, in Ireland, it's very safe. Crime is pretty much, it's not even comparable to most of the crime that you see across the United States. It's very, very safe. So that was a very important thing to keep in mind for me. Education was also pretty good. I have two kids, so I had to keep that take that into account as well. The standards of living in general, this is all stuff that I cover in the second book because this is the research I did. Basically, I was looking at the following countries. The United States as my first option. I really liked Canada as well. And since I have European citizenship, I was looking in Europe and I was looking at Spain and Ireland as some of the two best options within Europe for someone like myself having Spanish and English languages. Language is a pretty big issue as well, so that was something that I kept in mind.
What about, are there any signs now that you've been in Ireland for so long where are they starting to develop any kind of problems that are starting to pique your interest? I know there was the huge water issue that's come out now in the last week. Are there anything like that that is kind of starting to make you say, maybe I need to start paying attention to what's happening here?
Right. Well, I always pay attention because no place is perfect. That's one of the things that you learn. There's talking with other people that have moved around quite a bit. Whenever you move to a new place, you usually go through a period of the honeymoon period. The first year that you're somewhere else, new, everything looks great.
Right.
And after a couple of years or so, or after 1 year, you start looking at the problems rather than the nice things that you move there because of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, for example, maybe the thing that bothers me the most is weather. I already knew that it rains a lot here and that it's pretty cloudy and such. But then again, when summer comes, it's pretty nice as well and doesn't bother you nearly as much. But I think that the research I did and the strategy I had is, I talk about this with my wife pretty often. It's unbelievable that it worked out so well. I mean, we hadn't set foot here before we came. We didn't knew the place at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was all just pure research and study. I just researched the place as best as I could, and we decided purely and specifically because of that.
What about hoops? You had described some of the hoops that you would have had to jump through to get into the United States. Did you have to get hired by a company in Ireland to get there, or how did that work?
That was one of the reasons why we were looking at Ireland as well. I have a European citizenship. My grandparents, they're all from Spain, and I have citizenship for Europe. So basically I can live in any European country just like a normal, like any other citizen. Correct?
Uh-huh.
So that makes things very, so much easier. And this is something that I usually recommend, and people don't think about this when they think preparedness. But having a second citizenship, at least anywhere, but you know, maybe in Europe, that opens you the entire European community as an option if you ever have to leave. That's a huge advantage, and people don't think about that much.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that you had double citizenship, but that obviously would make a transition to Europe way easier. I wonder if there are other places out there for, like, if you're an American and you say, okay, well, that's second citizenship, that sounds like a pretty good deal. What countries are out there that are relatively easy to get a citizenship with?
Well,
are there any that you know of?
It's actually the countries that are easy to get citizenship, as in paying for it, are quite shady. The citizenship is... It's pretty interesting because you have different options. But a lot of people actually have maybe their grandparents or great-grandparents that are from the old world, you know, from Ireland, from Italy, or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually can have a second citizenship if they apply for it. But most people don't bother with it.
Oh.
It's basically a matter of applying and waiting a few years.
Huh. I had no idea. I'm going to have to go look into that because my family's all from Sicily, so I think that would qualify me in some way.
Absolutely. I mean, if your grandparent is from Sicily, you have the right to claim Italian citizenship, which opens the European community for you. I mean, it's crazy, but with that passport, you have the right not only to travel, of course, like anyone else, you have the right to live, you have the right to medical attention in all of Europe.
Oh, wow.
For free. So if there's something that goes on very much wrong in the United States and you cannot afford some expensive medical treatment, that second citizenship pretty much allows you to go to Italy and say, okay, heal me.
Right.
And that's it.
Wow. Well, that just jumped to the top of my priority list, I'll tell you right now, brother. That's cool. Okay, well, I want to talk a little bit. Well, first of all, I want to open up the phone lines. If anybody's out there and has any questions for Fernando, I would love to hear from you. You can call in right now at 866-37-TRUTH or 866-378-7884. Also, if you go to truthfrequency.com and go to the Listen Live section, there is a live chat that's happening right now. And if you have questions for Fernando, you can stick them in there and I will pass them along to him. But until we get some phone calls or until that chat room fills up with questions, Fernando, I'm wondering if you would talk to me just a little bit about your first book, The Modern Survival Manual. What is it about that first book that people, what kind of information in there might be unique to that book that people aren't going to get by going to another source?
Right. The Mars Survival Manual is a book that I wrote after realizing that there was no similar book elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I knew that I bought a ton of them, and most of the urban survival books that I bought just didn't address the issues that I was seeing and dealing with over there. As they were talking about security, self-defense, learning how to drive in certain ways, learning how to protect yourself from scams, from the kind of crime that is pretty much invading your life, right? Mm-hmm. Learning how to deal, how to haggle for prices. It's pretty complex. You don't just live without electricity. You live knowing that you have rolling blackouts, all right? So it's not as if the power is going to be going out one day and never coming back, but you have to learn to live with 3-4 blackouts per week. Problems with transportation, problems with the infrastructure, unemployment hitting 25% of unemployment. Mm-hmm. All those things rarely are addressed in our books, and I do address it in mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I want to come back to this idea that, you know, you can be prepped in terms of your supplies, right? You can have all of the things that you might need in the event of things going bad. But in the situation that you just described to me, you know, where you're unable to get consistent transportation, or you're unable to get consistent internet, or even unable to get consistent power, you know, that to me is going to result in a lot of stress for people, you know, and I think that's where people are really going to suffer, is that mental breakdown of just not being able to handle society as it comes, you know what I mean? So what kind of tips do you have for people to get mentally prepared, if any?
Man, it's absolutely true what you're saying. The mental aspect is massive and rarely addressed. You have to understand that when something like this happens, your country shifts. It changes. All of a sudden, you see, I mean, within a couple of years, half of the middle class or even more, you know, maybe even 70% of the middle class became poor.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just numbers. This is people eating out of the garbage in your front door.
Oh, man.
You know? This is people doing drugs. You see 5-6-year-old little kids smelling glue on the street,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting high on glue. Mm-hmm. It's a level of it's not just crime, but violent crime with a degree of hatred because of the class division that all of a sudden is creating a new kind of hatred in the society. That social hatred, you can also see it politically as well, where if you're not with them, you're against them, and you're the worst possible enemy. I mean, it becomes a very violent society. And as you well said, stress is without a doubt the worst killer of an economic collapse. Mm-hmm. The stress is a silent killer that kills people every day.
So, I mean, what do you recommend people do in turn? I mean, do you staged rolling blackouts or something? What can you do to be more mentally prepared for this, I guess, is what I want to keep coming back to, because I think you're totally right. I think the stress of the situation is, it's not going to be lack of water, lack of food. It's going to be being presented with 5-year-olds doing drugs in your front yard. That's going to be a complete paradigm shift for most people. And is there any way that we can prepare for that? I mean, do you recommend meditating an hour a day, or what do you do to get that mental calm?
Well, if meditating works for you, you have to be very strong mentally speaking. You have to stay very positive. That's why I have a big problem when people get all negative and they just focus on gloom and everything is catastrophic. Everything is going to be falling apart. It's always the end of the world. If you have that kind of attitude when things really get bad, you're not going to be making it, because I've seen suicide rates jumped.
Oh, I'm sure.
Overnight.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, people throwing themselves under the train every single week. Wow. Every single week, someone committed suicide under the train.
That's just remarkable. I mean, I don't know how to put myself in your position, you know, well enough to really imagine what that social change would have looked like.
I had it at the end of the day. I had it pretty good. I was okay. I had my family. We supported one another. We got through and such. I mean, 40 million people in the country are alive and they live every day, and a lot of them are actually even happy. So,
right.
But you have to be particularly resilient in terms of mental fortitude, because when you don't find jobs, when you go out there and you don't find a job for months, for years, I know people that were looking for a job for years, that destroys you as a person.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially
if you're not worth it, you feel the shame of not being able to support your family. Mm-hmm. People, that's why they ended up killing themselves.
So how was it that your family was successful? I mean, were you guys growing food, or did everybody just depend on the fact that you were already a crazy prepper and already had a whole bunch of stuff? Or what did you guys do from a family point of view to help get you through that transition?
Well, one of the things my father, my family actually ended up leaving before I did. They were already with a foot in Spain because things were very tough in Argentina, and about 250,000 people, Argentines, left to Europe. I think it was specifically to Spain alone. Over 200,000 people during those years. The lines in the embassy, amazing. I mean, people waited for days to get this passport that I'm telling people to get right now, and you could easily get it right now for a lot of folks. People were getting desperate to get that piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Because that meant a new world of opportunities for you. Mm-hmm. So my family had already left. They had already my parents, they're accountants, so they kind of saw some of these things coming, especially the financial aspect of it. Mm-hmm. We knew that things were getting pretty bad. My recommendation is not letting the events freeze you and stop you from action. You have to take action. If what you see is telling you that it's no longer viable wherever it is that you are and you have to go somewhere else, maybe that moment may come and you have to be brave enough to take it and get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes that's the only option you have left. What I cover in my first book about modern survivalism, about urban survival, that works up to a point. And the point is when you have to leave and there's no other choice but to leave. Sometimes that's what ends up happening.
And that's when we get into your second book, which is obviously bugging out and relocating when staying put is not an option.
Right.
Where is that line? I mean, where does that line fall between, I'm fully stocked, I'm an urban survivalist, everything is going good, and then, I'm going to leave now.
it's very tricky. It really depends on the specific situation. If there's a specific, for example, a natural disaster that's affecting an area for medium period of time, then you're probably not going to be leaving. At the very least, you're not going to be relocating. Maybe you're going to be bugging out momentarily somewhere else, but you're not going to be quitting on the country entirely, right?
Right.
That's very different if your example in Syria, if you are in eastern Ukraine, you have to get yourself out of there. That's not going to be getting fixed all of a sudden. That's not something that's medium or short term.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So you need the different plans. You need the short-term plan in case your house burns down, in case there's a flood, in case there's an earthquake, a tsunami or whatever. But you also need the plans in case there's something worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's more of an extreme case. That much is true. But it can happen, and it happens all the time.
How important do you feel like right now it is for Americans to have a game plan together to bug out?
I think it's crucial to always have it, because it can be something as simple as your house burning down, as I just said.
Right.
It can be a natural disaster affecting your area. It can be a pretty bad economic downturn for your specific state. The thing that the United States has going for it is that almost like each state behaves almost like a little country on its own right. So maybe if your country is struggling a lot, maybe the solution for you is moving to some other state, not leaving the country. Mm-hmm. You see?
Yeah. I've been thinking about moving to another state for sure.
Right.
It's been so nice and warm in Missouri lately. Now I'm starting to regret thinking like that.
Well, that's something important to keep in mind. The climate aspect is, I mean, you're going to be, if you move to Seattle, you're going to be suffering it a lot. So maybe you're going to be looking at some of the better off southern states that have more of a similar climate that you enjoy the most. Mm-hmm. Maybe Texas is a good option for you.
Mm-hmm. I hear lots of good things about Texas. I hear lots of great things about Colorado, too. And I know that a lot of the Alphabet agencies have moved their stuff there. So I think if they're preparing for some kind of natural disaster on a large scale, following those guys across the country might not be a bad plan. You
Texas and Texas and Colorado are two of the states that I specifically recommend in my second book because they hit different categories, important ones, key ones, very well. They have very good standards of living. It's not awfully expensive to live there. You have a good quality of life. You have good education. They do very well in very important things.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about your second book then, The Bugging Out. What kind of information is in that that people aren't going to, A, get from your first book and might not get from another book that relates to bugging out, things like that? What are the pertinent information that you're able to share with that second book?
Well, as we were talking about before, it's pretty straightforward in terms of the first one being the urban survival guide for when you're living there and getting through it. The second book about bugging out and relocating is specifically about bugging out when you have to leave all of a sudden quickly, when there's a quick problem that you have. I mean, bugging out may be you have 5 minutes or you have 0 minutes. You wake up in the middle of the night smelling smoke and you have 0 minutes to leave.
Right.
Because your house is on fire. It can be something that you have a few more hours, or it may be something that you have a few more days or a few more months even to make another decision. That's where we're getting into the relocating aspect, as we're talking about now. What state does it for you? Mm-hmm. What state offers the kind of life that you're looking for, given that where you are right now is changing and degrading and not offering it anymore? And finally, what I cover in the book as well is bugging out abroad. Bugging out abroad is when everything went to hell and you have no other choice but to leave the country, maybe even the continent entirely.
Wow. What kind of events do you think would have to, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what kind of events would have to happen that would require me to leave the continent, because that's a pretty big, I mean, that's a big change, I would think.
Well, you have, as meant, war. In certain parts of the world, war forces people to leave. I mean, we have millions of refugees right now. Mm-hmm. These are folks that ended up having to leave their country on foot, and they didn't have an option.
Yeah, there's been over a million displaced from eastern Ukraine into Russia. Over a million people displaced just over the last 6 months.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And these are folks that a couple years ago or even less than a year ago, you asked them, and they probably wouldn't have thought that they would be in this position today.
They had faster internet than we do. I mean, honestly, they lived in townhouses. They have faster internet. Estonia has the fastest internet in the world, if you can believe that. But Ukraine actually had much faster internet than we do here. And I agree. I think that's what's so important to me about all of this is that the transition can take place so quickly, and it can happen at the behest of these international corporate global idiots that are running the planet. They can come in and just smush your country without any concern about the people there. And I think we see that more and more going on. You know, we have Barack Obama said that we were going to bring in, I think, this year alone, 18,000 Syrian refugees that they're fast tracking into citizenship here now. So obviously the Syria situation is still live. The Ukraine situation is still live. The Gaza situation is tragic. We see this agenda that comes down from above and really doesn't seem to care much about, you know, us. And then we can talk about the continuity of government plans. Yeah. How the government really only cares about the government and not really about the continuity of your well-being. We talk about all that stuff on the show as often as we can, and I really want to impress upon people the idea that you need to be prepared, not only to be safe in your home, but to be safe in a separate location, be able to have your car ready to go, you know, all of those kind of things. So we've got about 5 minutes left. What are the most important things that you think people need to be ready to do right now, today, and what kind of priorities should people have in terms of preparation, Fernando?
People should, first of all, take care of themselves, their mental aspect, which we were mentioning before, staying very positive, learning how to cope. Most of all, start with yourself. Start taking care of yourself physically. Stay in shape. Stay fit. You know, if you are 50 pounds overweight, you probably have other concerns besides zombies or the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people do we know? You know it as well as I do. So, folks that are talking about, yeah, I have this gun for this and that. And you're looking at them as, dude, with all due respect, don't take this the wrong way, but a heart attack is probably going to be killing you before any of this.
Especially with the stress of the situation.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Which makes everything worse. The stress of it combined with poor physical fitness is going to be affecting you even more. Since we're talking about bugging out and relocating, you're not able to run or walk long distances either. Mm-hmm. That's a crucial problem as well. So first of all, take care of yourself mentally and physically, and then start working with the priorities in terms of the food supplies, tools for self-defense, the necessary gear that we always talk about.
Mm-hmm. What about concerns for family members, small kids, things like that that you might be traveling with? Are there any other, you know, concerns for bugging out with family?
Kids are pretty tough. You know, that's one of the things I knew and I saw it when we left ourselves. Kids maybe even get used to better than adults. They adapt faster in many ways.
That's just like one big camping trip to them, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. We worked hard in not making our family feel as refugees.
Right.
For them, it was this great, fun thing that we were going to this awesome place and starting a new life in some place better and nicer. So it was, we never suffered that thing of, oh, we feel like we're refugees, you know, mm-hmm. which it may end up being for some people. If you look at people that are refugees right now, some of them are in awful conditions, and some folks maybe left a few months ago on their own terms with a job, with something else. The timing was crucial in that case.
Right. Right. So, okay, that brings my question back to timing then. Like, I mean, do you wait for, you know, 10% of the population to start making that move? Or how do you keep yourself in front of the curve, I guess, would be my question.
You have to stay informed. You have to stay informed and look at key important things. For example, censorship. Censorship is something that should raise a huge red flag. I mean, if they start censoring the media from telling the truth of what's going on, mm-hmm. probably they're planning something very nasty. A big political change is knowing who's up there, knowing who's in control. As you were mentioning before, it's really companies running their world today.
Yes,
it is. I mean, companies are the ones that put presidents in place.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically their employees, right?
Yeah.
So knowing who represents which interests is very important. And if all of a sudden something happens and you know there's going to be a nasty future ahead of you, then do what you know you have to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you just brought up the key of censorship, too, because we had a story that came out of, I want to say it was Mike Adams over at Health Ranger this last week, that they did a trial run in California where they shut down for a full day all of the independent alternative news sites. They just shut them down. And it's being billed as kind of a dry run to do that nationwide. But it's interesting though, Fernando, we've been talking about kind of all of these key issues, you know, the unemployment numbers going up, the inflation numbers going up, the infrastructure, and now you're talking about censorship. I mean, every single key point that you're picking out, I can put on an article that I read within the last 2 weeks here in the States. I mean, we're not,
yeah,
I don't have to go back far
concerning.
At all.
That's concerning.
Yeah, okay.
So that's something concerning, actually.
Okay, you agree with him. We should be concerned about that. Okay, Fernando, again, thank you so much for joining us on the show today and spending some time with us. Just cannot thank you enough for coming and sharing your information with us, sir.
Hey, it was great talking with you. I really enjoyed it. And John, whenever you want to talk again, just let me know.
I will absolutely do it. Please, ladies and gentlemen, go to themodernsurvivalist.com. Fernando, both of your books are available on that website. Am I correct?
Yeah, they're actually in Amazon. You can find them in Amazon, both books. They're there.
Okay, perfect. Well, Fernando, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and I do appreciate you being here. Take care, and we will talk to you again in the future, I hope.
Thanks, absolutely.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that has been Fernando Aguirre. Again, the website, themodernsurvivalist.com. Join us tomorrow. L.A. Marzulli will be on the show. We'll be talking about Nephilim and elongated skulls, and he is essentially Indiana Jones, ladies and gentlemen. So we are very excited to be having L.A. Marzulli join us on the show tomorrow. That does it for the broadcast today. Of course, this was Monday. It's in the books. Take care,
everybody.
Apple's
iPhone 5S has been very successful in the U.S., but we realize that people here in India cannot afford the iPhone. That's why we've decided to work closely with the Apples to bring the iPhone experience to India. We call it the iPhone 5X. The iPhone 5X was built with advanced new hardware, The phone runs on the new Apple's A10 Snapdragon 7870HD 2-liter turbo Galaxy 29 GHz processor. Our advanced operating system features some of the best apps out there. We have classics such as Instant Cram, Samosa Crush Saga, World of Duty, Call of Warcraft, and Temple Run, in which you get to run from an actual mob of Hindu priests.
And to wrap it all up, we have 24/7 customer service lines in case you idiots need help with your new iPhonies.
Hello, welcome to iPhone tech support. This is Ben Katesh.
Are you sure you're not one of those outsourced white people?